VIP Conduit presents Getting to Know You for September 2021. This month, we welcome Rich Kelly from Emmitsburg, Iowa. Sit back and listen to his fascinating story, guided by our host, Susie B.
Welcome, everyone, to tonight's edition of Getting to Know You. And tonight, my guest is Rich Kelly. Rich, welcome.
Thank you, Susie.
We're going to start off with very basic questions. Where were you born?
Waterloo, Iowa.
Okay, and is this where you grew up?
We lived between Waterloo and Evansdale till I was just shy of five. In 1964, the family moved back to Emmitsburg, Iowa, which is where the parents were from this county. Both graduated from Emmitsburg Catholic. Parents did.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
Two older brothers, Kevin and Steve, and two sisters. My sister Lorraine, who is older, died from diabetes complications last year. She was adopted. And a younger sister, Mary, that lives here in town.
Okay, at what point was your vision problems discovered?
When I was an infant, they knew that there was problems.
All right, there were problems, but did you have some vision and able to go to regular school?
Yeah, the left eye always was pretty worthless, I think about 2400. And the right eye had tunnel vision, and at its best in my life was corrected to 2040. But yeah, I went through grade school and high school and mostly college functioning fairly sighted. But the older I got, the more difficult it became to read books.
Okay, did you go to public school or did you go to parochial school?
8 years in the, kindergarten was a public school. 1 through 8 was the Catholic school, and then 9 through 12 was the public high school, junior high. And then I did 2 years at the local junior college and then transferred to the University of Iowa to get my degree.
Thinking back, what was your favorite, did you have a favorite subject in school that you were really good at and you really enjoyed?
I wouldn't say I was always really good at it. Now, it depended a lot on the instructor, but history would have been the primary favorite topic.
In school, were you involved in music or sports or any other extracurricular activity?
7th, 8th, and 9th grade, I managed some of the team sports. Basketball, track, football, and then never did band or anything like that. I did senior year, they organized a peer counseling group, which we attended some meetings, but it never amounted to much, really.
Well, now, when you were a sports manager, I think you quit your job.
Well, that was my senior year, when my brother was a senior and I was a sophomore. I started out managing the high school football, and the first game of the season, they had me up in the schoolhouse washing towels. And I thought, well, I'll never get to watch my brother play at this rate, so I said, sorry, coach, but I'm just going to be on the sidelines.
I think that was a good reason to step away from that job. Now, in your, and I think it was your senior year, you got kind of interested or involved in politics. Tell us about that.
Well, more city government than politics. I was having breakfast one morning, and on the radio was turned on, of course, and they announced that Friday was the deadline to file papers to run for one of several openings on the city council seat, and I quit, asked my mom kind of jokingly, maybe I should run. And she threw back, well, maybe you should. So I did. It ended up being a four-way race for the Ward 3 seat. I got 47 votes. The owner of a bar, Tom Berry, got 46. A retired police chief, Pete Salisbury, got 33. And a radio operator at the Comm Center got 31. So I won by one vote.
Did you vote for yourself?
I did, and my grandpa on my mother's side loved to remind me that I wouldn't be where I was if he hadn't voted for me, and I always threw back at him, well, if I hadn't voted for me, I wouldn't be there either.
Good for you. Well, did you enjoy that?
I did, and it influenced what I was going to do in college. I was decided, having been actively involved there, to study with the idea of going into city administration of some sort. But to make the long story short, when I eventually got into the grad program I wanted to be in, I should have taken a semester off to get my wits collected and a few things, and I got a C in the one class, so I dropped out of that before they kicked me out of grad school. And then I sat around for a summer, pondering, found out that with a set of courses in the autumn term and student teaching in the spring term, I could have a secondary high school teaching shingle, and I pursued that.
Did you ever actually teach in the classroom, or was that a tough nut to crack in terms of getting into the teaching thing? I know that's really tough for a lot of people. I think a lot of times it depends on who you know.
Well, for about three and a half years, I substitute taught, and there were several occasions where I had teaching assignments that lasted as long as 3 weeks. So, I did wet myself a little bit, but as I'm sure all of you know, substitute teaching most of the time is not teaching. It's just trying to hold the lid on the pot and make sure nothing goes wrong. So a lot of study all the time with that. I think the strangest one, though, was the morning they called me and asked me if I'd like to teach driver's ed today. great hesitancy. And she says, well, you won't be going out in any of the cars. It's just classroom. So I did.
Oh, I love that. You had fairly good usable vision. I think you actually took driver's ed yourself, didn't you, in high school?
Yeah, in high school I did. I had tunnel vision without really realizing what it meant to have tunnel vision. The driver's ed manual actually had a visual trying to depict what it was, and it showed basically like two circles, like you're looking, what you could see at the end of a toilet paper tube or something, and the rest was, grayed out or blacked out. But that really doesn't convey what the reality of it is, because as your eyes pan back and forth, it's kind of like a TV screen. It fills in the blanks where to make sense of it all. And unfortunately, that also means that you sometimes see things that aren't there and don't see things that you should see. So I never was really comfortable driving, did very little of it, and made sure I had a photo ID so I didn't have to, give up the license at the end. I kept it as a souvenir.
Now, a lot of us in times have had special doctors that maybe we had when we had surgery, or they detected something, or you had an eye doctor that took a real interest in you, even though there wasn't anything that they could do. But you're the only person I know that had an anesthesiologist that was very important in your life. And was this connected with surgery and keeping you asleep?
No, he was trying to keep me awake. It was he was the gentleman that taught me basic computer skills at the DOS level. He was the anesthetist at our local hospital. My mom at that time was working as the ward secretary, and you know, knew him, and had mentioned I was out of college looking for work and wanting to learn something of computers. And Joe said, "We'll send him over for coffee and we'll talk." And I formatted 100 floppy disks, format space, and so on and so forth. Thank God that at that time DOS was at the level where you could actually type format and hit enter and not lose everything. It gave you a warning if you messed up. But yeah, Joe, I bought his computer off of him shortly thereafter. It was 1 week shy of a year old. He was changing jobs and moving. Figured he wouldn't have time to work with it, so he sold it to me at a nice price. And I continued to go off what he taught me and teach myself. And one of my old college roommates, I contacted him, and he bought me a copy of the academic version of WordPerfect for DOS. And I taught myself quite a bit with that. And eventually ended up doing some desktop publishing with a laser printer I bought, and some other things. So yeah, that was my start into computing. The Nestis just taught me.
I find that so interesting. I love the slant of the anesthesiologist being your computer teacher. Well, I know that your wife, who's deceased now, Debbie, she didn't live in your town. How did you meet Debbie?
We initially talked on For the People, and then I had a friend of mine that lived in the Twin Cities that had been after me to come up and visit, and Debbie was going to the cities to visit her brothers. So we agreed to meet up, and we did, and she said when I was going back to Emmitsburg, she said, "I'd like to come along and see what Emmitsburg's all about." So she came down and never left. We got an apartment close to where my mom's home was, and we courted for 9 months. Took a lot of static, you know, the people that said, "Why don't you just move in?" And we said, "No, we're going to do this the way we think's right, get to know each other better." So she was here about 9 months before we got married.
Now, I think you were the main cook in the family, is that correct?
No, I wouldn't say that. We had a family where everybody learned to do chores and everybody learned to cook. And the curious thing is that my brothers and I turned out to be better cooks than my sisters. Now, my sister Mary can put a mean dessert on the table and things like that, but as far as it comes to organizing a meal, it's not going to happen. So from the time Debbie and I were married, and Debbie loved to cook as well, and she was a good cook, we were the house that prepared all the holiday meals from there on out.
Now, I know that, I'm jumping way ahead. I'll go back. I'm not real good at doing things in order, but I know that you've had some major health issues, and a couple of years ago, you were given a really lousy prognosis, but you had the option of doing some experimental treatment, and good for us that you did that, because you're still here. But the thing that I was so surprised at, because I'd heard that, you know, it was very, very serious, and the next thing I knew, you were remodeling your kitchen. And usually people who are remodeling their kitchen are not on a countdown. So I want you to tell me about the kitchen that you remodeled. Take us through it. What did you do?
Well, I'll go back a little bit as you did, jumping forward. But it was 2 years ago, October, that I went and had a check. I'd already had the esophagectomy and some radiation and chemo in the months since August the year prior. And I'd had my esophagus removed and had several surgeries. And the initial scan after surgery looked still things clear, no sign of the cancer. And the surgeon was quite confident he'd gotten it all. And I always thought to myself, you know, it just takes one little molecule that they missed to set up housekeeping someplace else. So when I went back to the oncologist for a test in October 2 years ago, he said to me first thing was, it's back with a vengeance, and he rattled off like 4 places, including the esophagus, that it had returned. He said, I understand if you'll choose to do nothing, we'll set you up with hospice care and do whatever we can to support you. And I looked at him and said, how long do you think I've got? And he said, 3-4 months max. But I want you to try this new treatment. There have been some good results with it. So I did, and that treatment worked for quite a while, put cancer in remission for a period of time. So about 6 months ago, it came back in another location. So they changed up chemo treatments again, and that cancer seems to have disappeared, and the rest are staying in remission. But yeah, it was a lousy, wake-up call diagnosis. And the one thing I knew, I'd been through my dad going through bone cancer, and I'd been through Debbie having breast cancer in passing. And I would really think that was training for me dealing with my own. And I always said to myself, watching my dad, if I ever get really sick, if I handle it half as well as he did, I'd be doing well. So I knew part of it was you had to focus on something positive. And the two things I focused on was I wanted to redo the kitchen. I'd been working on the fun of getting a home equity loan from Wells Fargo. Every time you turn around, now we need this, now we need that. I almost told them to forget it, but I hadn't. So I borrowed the money to do that. And the other thing, I thought, I need a hobby, something fun to focus on and take my mind off the other. So that's how I resurrected model railroading. And it's radically changed from when I first toyed with it 30-odd years ago.
Okay, let's wait about the railroad. I want to talk about the kitchen. Take us through the kitchen, what you did.
Okay, the way this house is laid out, it's a 3-bedroom ranch. And rather than the long side of it facing the street, the narrow edge does. So the front two windows, one's like the entry, and one's one of the bedroom windows. But you step into the entry, and then there's another door that opens into the living room area. And it's just a big room that goes all the way back to the kitchen sink on the east wall. So there's a fair bit of wasted space, I thought, in the living area. And you had your, close to the kitchen, the place where dining table and chairs, and then there's kind of a, I guess you'd call it the backside of the stairway and the doorway that goes into a closet there. That was kind of the dividing line between the kitchen, dining, and the living area. So what I proposed, and I asked a couple of people about it, I moved the dining space over more into some of the living area, added counter space extending out from the refrigerator over to where the wall was for the end of the stairwell, and then made a 90-degree turn and created a 2-seat breakfast bar. So, a lot more counter space. Moved the dining table, put a chandelier light over it, and changed out the lighting in the kitchen area, painted it up. We put vinyl plank flooring on the floor, and everyone says, made it seem a lot bigger and open.
Do you like it?
I love it. I think Debbie would have really liked it too.
Do you have any particular dish? Well, you do. What are your favorite things that you like to cook?
Probably the two dishes I prepare when I have company more often than not are a 3-bean chili and corned beef dinner.
Well, someone told me before I came in here tonight that you had been baking bread this morning. So how did it come out?
Well, I baked bread this morning, and then after the mailman came, he had rye flour, so I baked bread through the day as well. And I'm happy to report the wheat bread came out nicely, and so did the rye.
I heard that you were baking 2 loaves of bread, and I wanted to know if you were doing fishes, too. I thought maybe you were going to feed us all tonight, but the bread sounds wonderful, and I know your house must really smell good right now.
Well, my sister came by, and I gave her 2 loaves to share with Mom, and then my friend Al stopped by, and I gave him part of the loaf of the wheat, and I gave him 1 taste of the rye bread, and I've got a corned beef thawing right now, and either in the night or tomorrow morning I'll cook that up, and I plan to make up some Reuben sandwiches and freeze them for future use.
I know some mouths are watering right now. Okay, I know that you essentially taught yourself a lot of your computer know-how. What about Braille? Do you use Braille at all? And if so, how did you learn it?
I use Braille minimally. I taught myself primarily with a Dymo Braille gun. You know, spinning and clicking, and I used it to label my music CDs. And then I put a corresponding database in WordPerfect on the computer so I could look things up by number and then go to the rack and find it that way. And the other motivation was to play cards with Braille, decks of cards. But, I'll never be a Braille reader. I've got neuropathy pretty bad now, and I do encourage everybody that can learn Braille when you're young, because I think those who find the jobs, more often than not, are the ones who know their Braille.
So I'm guessing that your ideas may be similar to mine. Computers are not a replacement for Braille. I think they're an addition, too. So if you have both, I think that puts you ahead of the game. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, by not knowing the Braille and being able to use the slate and stylus, that would be like taking pen and paper away from the sighted world. And if you did that, we'd have chaos.
Yes. Well, since you're kind of a self-taught guy, what about the mobility, cane travel?
One day a gentleman came up from the Iowa Department for the Blind. I don't even remember what year it was, but he handed me a pair of sleep shades and said, put these on, and handed me a white cane and said, take me someplace. So I tapped my way over to the church, which was about 2 blocks, and on the way he pointed out how the sound of the air moving around buildings gave you indicators and the feel of the ground and whatnot. And my official cane travel training lasted all of maybe 15 minutes. And the rest I just continued on my own.
Now, you mentioned earlier when I snagged you away to make you tell me about the kitchen. No, I need to ask you one more thing. How do you handle shopping and bill paying, and how is transportation in your area?
Well, generally, my friend Al, for many years, took me shopping every Saturday. Now my sister takes me occasionally, and we now have 2 grocery stores again. And I have the option with one I can order delivered, which I have not done yet. But the other one you can place your order, have it all ready in a cart, and have somebody just pull up at the grocery store, call the store and say, you know, we're here for this order, and they'll bring it out. So those are the methods for that. They do have a ride service that has kind of a rudimentary tax, except you have to schedule it, you know, 2 days ahead of time. So we do have that for getting around. But otherwise, I've been blessed with really good friends that if I need to get someplace like an airport, they've always gotten me there.
When you were in maybe high school and university, did you find that you tried to hide your blindness?
Yes. I wasn't quite ready to deal with it. I was living that idea that it'll stay this good forever. And it did get me through the university days, but once I was out looking for work and things, and I was back in Iowa City area substitute teaching, And I went home for a visit, and I got home and walked into the parents' main bathroom, and the stainless steel ring around the sink that was embedded in the counter looked dull gray. It was always bright shiny. And I knew right then, things are going south.
Reading. Do you enjoy reading novels and history and whatever? What sort of books do you like? And do you have particular authors that you kind of gravitate to?
Mainly history, historic fiction, those sort of novels. World War II, World War I. Things related to aviation were really of primary interest. But two authors in the fiction area that I thoroughly enjoy and can listen to are the James Herriot books. I can go back to those every few years and still enjoy it and get something new out of them and be entertained and just thoroughly enjoy it. And the author, Patrick Taylor, creator of the Irish Country Doctor series. I just love those. I'm reading one right now, and I know that his new book's out in a few weeks, and I'll be snagging that as soon as I can.
Chat sites. Prior to VIP, I think you have been involved in a number of chat sites. Was For the People your first, or was there another one?
My first was the Accessible Text Chat site, and I don't remember who ran it. A guy named Joker Dog, but I never knew his name. And I got onto that mainly because a woman from Barcelona, Spain, that had been helping off the JAWS user list at the time, asked me to come on so she could practice her English by typing it back and forth. And, she moved on from that, and I started talking to other people, and once we moved to voice, it was so much nicer.
Now, I think you have a business, don't you? A small business that you run, and tell us a little bit about it, and if anyone wanted to go and get involved with your services there, what's the name of it?
Well, I started what I call Kelly Sum Computing back in, 88, 89, I've actually forgotten what year it was. But I was doing some desktop publishing, and I sold some software here and there. Dabbled into selling Irish folk music. And while I still got the business, the only person that's, I'm doing work for is my blind spot, because I have to be paid as a 1099 employee rather than W-2. I don't advertise. And honestly, if somebody approached me, I've given away more support than I'll ever recoup. I don't have any structured fees or something like that. But the one thing, as my vision was going, one thing that was key to being independent to me was keeping track of your finances. So I started out with a program called Money Counts for DOS. And in 94, I believe it was, Intuit bought out Parsons Technology, killed Money Counts, and forced us all to go to QuickBooks if we wanted to do anything. And of course, for years I used QB, and everyone said a blind person cannot use that, it's impossible. Well, JAWS was the only screen reader I tried that would read most of the screens. It did have to use a lot of JAWS cursoring and stuff. And, get familiar with what you were doing so you could find the routines again. But the long and short of having forced myself to use that beast of a program was when it became thoroughly inaccessible. It was about the same time that my blind spot, a scripter named John Martin, that many of you may know from doing iTunes scripting at one point, or other things, managed to get a toehold in the door into it and began working on making QuickBooks more accessible. And it was a year or so into that project, after I begged and begged to be put on as a tester, they finally put me on. And within the first few months, probably not even that, they were asking if I wanted to work for them. And so I've been working for MBS ever since.
Okay, great. Now, we get up to you needed something fun in your life, and you resurrected, and I love the name of this, you resurrected your railroad. And what is it called?
I fondly refer to it as the bankruptcy railroad because it is a money pit. In the old days, you bought a train set, and you can still buy a train set for under $150, and basically have a set of a loop of track, an engine, a few cars, and a power source that has a throttle, forward and reverse, and that's it. And when I got back into it, I found out they now have engines that actually have sound on board. And it just made it so much more real. So I gave up on the old analog stuff and went to this digital command control, and a decent engine probably starts at $150-$160 by itself, and they can get very expensive. So I think the bankruptcy railroad's appropriate.
Now, didn't your nephew help you set up your present track system with how many sheets of plywood?
Actually, it was my friend Al helped me build it. I had the concept, and he had the know-how. So what had been my computer room office in the basement for years is now the train room. It's a, 11.5 by 22 foot long room. And now it has three sheets of plywood that are attached to the north wall. They're 40 inches off the floor. And then between each of those sheets of plywood is a 2 by 2 foot piece at either end. So you've got a 16 by 8 foot layout. And then you've got these two by 4 foot cutouts on either side of the center board. So you can pop up and work on the layout from one of those openings or from the outer edge and never have to stretch more than, roughly 2 feet.
Okay, tell us the layout. And you have an audio production for us that you're going to play. What do you have on this setup? Or is that on part of the audio?
No, it's not on the audio. What I've got, when you come into the room, the first board is basically a town square with a county seat and businesses surrounding it, and of course the corresponding streets. And then on the south end of the board is where the main train depot is and one of the hotels. The far end of the board is not quite fleshed out yet, but of course you've got two loops of track that run the outer perimeter, and they're both right now passenger trains. One's a Southern Pacific Daylight Special, and the other one's from the Rock Island Line. And then interiorly, there are two more loops, one that extends across all four of the boards as the Milwaukee Road freight train, and then stretching over to the two western boards is a smaller steam engine line, but I'm trying to configure it so the Milwaukee Road and the steam engine line can exchange freight. On the center board is residential and a historic type airport with old planes on it. And then on the third board, there's a small country village, a train depot, and two farms is the plan. It's all still a work in progress.
Okay, let's take a trip with your trains. We'll get to hear them, and you can tell us what they are. And after that, folks will have a chance to ask you a few questions. Will that work?
Yeah, let me see if I can get this critter to play again. Welcome to what I fondly refer to as my bankruptcy railroad. I'm going to apply power to the track. You'll hear two of the three engines start up, and then I'll run the freight train, Milwaukee Road diesel, and a steam engine partially around the track so you can hear what it sounds like. Here we go. Thank you. Okay, we're going to take the sound of the steam engine off for the moment. So now what you hear is my freight train Milwaukee Road engine idling. DCC control of that, and we'll start it around the track. So we've stopped the freight train. Now we'll switch over to the steam engine.
Thank you, Rich. I love the trains. Now, folks, it's your chance to get to ask some questions. The only thing I ask is if when you key up and somebody gets the key, please let go of the key so that that person can ask their question and Rich can answer it. Because I think we'll have plenty of time for everybody to get a chance to ask a question. So, folks, he's yours.
That, I love that train, Bankruptcy Railroad, and that was so cool. It sounded so real. I am so curious, I can't resist asking. What year did you graduate from high school, Rich?
1978.
Rich, great interview, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I love that your train hobby, too. But I'm fascinated about that kitchen you remodeled. Did you actually do the work yourself? I'm sure you must have had some help with if you did. I'm just curious about that.
No, I was mainly the concept guy. You know, I knew what I wanted done. And, you know, we talked about, had somebody draw out what I was talking about, measured up the cabinets, and my friend Al is, he'd worked for a company that installed cabinetry for institutional, you know, offices, hospitals, and so on and so forth for years. So he did the install for me.
Great interview, Rich. You're just a shining an example to us.
Thanks. I'm just trying to live my life the best I know how to.
Jack said, Rich, you're a good example. Would that there were more like you.
Rich, I remember when we used to do the donut shop over on Out of Sight, a lot of times you couldn't sleep, so you'd get up and you'd be baking bread and you'd come in and talk to us. Rich, do you have any animals in your life, or do you have any cats or dogs with you?
I have a Sheltie, Rory Maeve, the spinster. She's just turned 6 years old this month, and she's about just shy of 40 pounds. She's a real sweetheart. I tell people she lets me live here.
That's how our pets are, too. They own us. But that was an absolutely wonderful interview, and you are a really good example of a very full life. Oh, and I wish I lived closer to you. I love the smell of home-baked bread.
Other people with questions?
Yeah, I've got an uncle that was in real estate, and so one of the key things you did when you were selling a home was you either had cookies freshly baking or bread, and that would oftentimes, tip the buyer to buy.
Yes, that makes perfect sense, that homey feel.
Rich, when my condo was being shown, I didn't know that the realtor was going to bake cookies. I didn't know that was supposed to be a selling point. And not knowing that, I didn't tell her that my oven didn't register correctly. In order to have your oven set at 350, you needed to put it at 225. So needless to say, when I came back, I could smell that something had burned. So her cookies had burned.
Oops.
Yeah, not a good selling point.
No. That was not the effect that she was looking for.
Great job, Rich. I'm looking forward to editing it. I had a phone call, so I wasn't able to hear the whole thing, but it was great.
Thank you, Mara. I can help with that if you need.
Rich, I want to thank you so much for allowing me to interview you and for the calls that we had going over this stuff, and it's been my pleasure, and thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.